manufacture for us, because what we say is in them is in them, because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine, shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's hour three, actually hour six of our Breeders' Cup recapping. Andy Serling joining us from the New York Racing Association. Got to see Andy, I guess just that one time, right? On was that Saturday or Friday? Saturday, I think.
One time's enough.
Right.
It was actually kind of more than enough.
Well, every so often, you know, when you venture out of New York, I get to see you at a Derby or at a Breeders' Cup. And
I've been to the Derby once.
Oh, so that was the only. Was that a Derby? What Derby was that?
I probably tried to avoid you, so I blocked it.
Well, I'm useful enough to have to pick you up at airports.
That was 12 years ago. Okay? I'll live. I have to hear about that the rest of my life. And you're only happy about doing that because I was with somebody who you liked. What even about me? Just not the like the person I was with.
All right, fair enough. You make a great point. This was give us your overview. What was your immediate takeaway from what we were treated to?
That the weather was really great. And that's having the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland is very dependent on the weather being good. They better hope if they have it again, it's not cold and rainy. It was fun, you know. It was a lot of fun. It was nice being there, and I enjoyed it. And the racing was good, and as expected to be. You know, saw a lot of people I like. It was fun. It was a nice experience, and obviously, you know, Flightline was exciting, and that got a lot of people excited, which is good. My experience was really good. I had a fun time. I like being there. I enjoy Keeneland. It's the first time I've been there in 7 years.
Wow.
Getting back there more. Yeah, I'm going to try to get there in the spring for a few days. I enjoy it.
Well, I mean, years ago, you used to go, like, I think every year, yeah. I remember, you went for a while.
Well, in the mid-90s, when I was playing full-time, I used to go for the whole spring meet.
Yeah.
That was a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I enjoy it there. I've always liked Keeneland. It's funny to have watched the change when I first started going. They didn't have an announcer.
How about that? That's long enough ago that the people, I there's probably a whole group of people who, when they hear that, you know, new players and people that have come to the game, they must say, "What do you mean? There was no announcer." There was
the two things that changed are the announcer, and back then, before they put in the synthetic course, they never took races off the turf unless it was late in the fall meet and the weather had gotten so cold and bad that it just sort of shredded the course and it was destroyed. But in the spring meet, never. And when I say never, I mean never. That was their days that rained all day and the races were on the turf, and that really changed. It's now they do it. I mean, you know, when they put the synthetics, they can move them to synthetic, though. Unlike other people, I don't believe the synthetic and turf are the same. I think there's a somewhat occasionally a correlation, often more than there is with dirt, but it's a third surface.
Fair enough.
And we're in an industry that likes to tell people that the dirt at Churchill plays like a turf course, and there's people that actually believe that. There's also people who believe in Santa Claus. So, you know, there's a lot of people who believe in a lot of dumb things. But in racing, we repeat it like it's smart.
Let's get the big conversation out of the way early, and then we'll back up through some of the highlights and the interesting results and how the wagering went. I opened the show or opened the week of coverage and recapping Andy yesterday with Andrew Beyer to get some historic perspective, and I thought Andy was just perfect yesterday. What is your take? Because there's been some interesting things. There's been some ridiculous things suggested.
Andy was perfect. Andy, I just got that. Well, there are a lot of issues in today's culture, and where people feel as though if they were part of something, it's only better if they can declare it better than everything in the past. So, not just in racing, but in a lot of things, you have a lot of sort of advanced stupidity going on from people that don't have or respect historical perspective. And so they need to say, you know, that was the best basketball player I ever saw. That was, you know, this endless debate about LeBron James and Michael Jordan. They're both great. How do they compare to Bill Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Well, those guys were big and they're not quite as big. You know, it's an endless, meaningless debate. Fight Line's terrific. I mean, he's the best horse that's raced in this country since Gosack. How he would compare to a horse like Frankel, that doesn't matter. One ran the turf, one ran the dirt. Both were exceptional talents. Frankel had a much more extensive, longer career. Flightline didn't. In today's world, there are going to be much more these horses that don't run as often. You know, I remember when a lot of us wanted to declare Gosap or this Hall of Fame or all-time great. There was an incredible amount of pushback because he only ran 10 times. Now, there doesn't seem to be any discussion of the fact that Flightline only ran 6 times. If Skipaway, one of the most disrespected horses of my lifetime, and I don't think Skipaway is upset about it. He doesn't know he's disrespected, but fans do. Had run once every 2 to 3 months instead of once every 2 to 3 minutes, because I don't think he ever skipped a race throughout his entire career, he too might have only run Byers in the 120s. He ran 4 of them. If Formal Gold, who might be the best horse, might be at his best the best horse I've ever seen, and I came around after Secretariat, had run, instead of being rushed through his career, and, you know, running them like against, you know, and basically the Pennsylvania Derby and then the Meadowlands Cup against Olders, and then got the Breeders' Cup in California, and then got over, you know, running the Big Cap and running in the Dubai World Cup and, you know, in the Don and all these races. If he had a much more, you know, a campaign where he only ran every couple months, he probably would have run more of those 120-plus buyers he ran. And at the end of his career, before he got hurt, he'd beat Skipaway, who is a true great, like he was a gnat. And if these horses had only run a handful of times, and I'm not knocking Flightline in any way. I think he's terrific. I think his connections did what was best for him. And he was incredibly thrilling. And what he did on Saturday was jaw-dropping. He chased this insane pace like it was nothing. He's an awesomely talented horse. Absolutely one of the greatest horses I've ever seen race. But when people say he's the best horse in Secretariat, and they don't even know who the hell Formal Gold is or Skipaway was, I mean, Arrogate ran great races for 4 races in his life. Because he ran his other races were bad, people tend to dismiss him. His race against Gunrunner, and we saw what Gunrunner did the rest of the year, was jaw-droppingly great. Let's praise horses without needing to dismiss the performances of so many others that came before them. Flightline's not better than Spectacular Bit. It doesn't matter whether if you could boil his talent down. Spectacular Bit was 24 for 24 from 7 furlongs to 10 furlongs. He set a track record as a 2-year-old doing a 1/16 at Laurel. I don't believe the track records matter much because most of them are about racetracks and how fast they are, but come on, you know, and when people who should know better say he's better than Spectacular Bid, it's insulting to the history of the game. So it doesn't bother me. I just find it unfortunate because it's more of a learning experience. Let's talk about the great horses, even for the past 50 years, when they say he's the best horse in Secretariat. And there's hints that he's better than Secretariat. You know, there's nitwits that suggest he is. It's not fair to the game. The game is great because there's so much great history to it. Flightline is a big now part of that great history of great horses. And that's really terrific. But we don't need to dismiss and insult good horses from the past to somehow make him seem better. He's good enough.
Agreed. And when you mention, you know, that there's this, there's actually been this kind of strange leapfrogging of an era from Ghost Zapper to the 70s. Andy yesterday cut through that by saying, he said, what I've been asking myself since the Pacific Classic is, Flightline is the best American thoroughbred horse, dirt horse since blank. He said that's been, he's been rolling it over and going, you know, mentally through the Rolodex. And he says Sunday Silence. He was the, and that's,
yeah.
That was,
how about an Easy Goer? How about a Ferdinand Alidar?
Exactly.
But it's no Slew.
There's only these certain fence posts. The fact that Andy was the first person that I've heard invoke Sunday Silence, and it's actually,
oh, for sure. I sent out videos of him on Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's a very apt and very good reference.
Well,
point.
I think Formal Gold. I believe that an actual talent in that Formal Gold was a remarkable racehorse that will never ever get his just due.
Sure.
Mostly because he was really just thrown to the wolves so quickly and so readily. It's not like he didn't hold his own and run so badly in those races. He was a remarkably talented horse, especially at his very best. And, you know, to me, to suggest that Flightline belongs in the conversation with horses like Sunday Silence and Ghost Zapper. You know, Ghost Zapper ran a 124 buyer in his Breeders' Cup Classic, and Flightline had a 121. Now, Ghost Zapper did it being able to control in a more moderate pace. I mean, let's not carry away. It was like 47 and a half. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like they were just, you know, walking, but nonetheless, you know, he didn't do it. What Flightline was impressive about his race was not just how fast it was, but he didn't exactly do it under easy circumstances. And I mean, I think one of the great compliments to pay to him is how remarkably well Life Is Good ran. And what's funny is that Life Is Good had to run this race to retire. Couldn't run the mile again. Frankly, if he ran another race, he should run the sprint. Imagine what he'd done to those horses. But that he was able to hang around until past the eighth pole in any reasonable fashion, given the pace he set with that monster chasing him and the way he put him away, is a real credit to Life Is Good. And even though Life Is Good ran fifth in the race, I would argue that it actually, in a lot of ways, helped him. I would say it cements, I mean, an already terrific reputation. And I think Life Is Good comes out of that race as an even better horse than I think some people realized. Smart people. People that understand racing. Not people that say that, you know, that Flightline would have beaten Ghost Zapper by 15 lengths and Secretary by 5 lengths. Not that kind of idiocy. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a tremendous performance. I mean, you know, if you take that race apart from a race dynamic standpoint, it just explodes how well. I think that Craig gave the race like a 174 pace figure. I mean, that's just insane. I think it's 20 or more points than you've ever seen at the fastest paces in the Classic. It was a remarkable, remarkable performance. He chased a meltdown scenario and drew off and ran a 121 buyer. He's a tremendous horse, an incredible horse. Probably not worth $184 million. Nonetheless, a tremendous racehorse. And you don't need to say more. You can talk about his performance. You don't need to criticize other great horses from the past. Dismiss Sunday Silence. Give me a break.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. All right. Let's...
Not perfect.
No.
I prefer to be imperfect.
That's how we love you. In terms of some of the betting opportunities, Andy, and you know the way some of these races unfolded, it always takes repeated viewings to absorb everything. Let's tick backwards maybe to the distaff. How about that? That was a treat. In any other Breeders' Cup, this would be the only thing people would be talking about. The three horses headlong to the wire.
Has there ever been a horse, a good horse like Malathot? She's terrific. That wins every photo she's in. How many races has she come to the wire and you don't think she's necessarily going to get up? And she wins every one of them. She won as much as one. The Ivan Phipps is the outlier, right? It's the only close race she ever lost. I guess Weird Stuff class, just that last year was reasonably close. She's a cool horse. I mean, the fighting with that race we talked about beforehand was all these overlays. Clariere was 6-1. She should have been 3-1. The winner was paid almost $8. She should have been 2-1 or less. Obviously, Searchholz didn't lose that run, but she should have been bigger. The idea that society was a shorter price than Clariere is inane. And Nest is a really terrific horse. And, I look forward to her next year, and I'll bet she has a great year. But she shouldn't have been an overwhelming favorite in the race. She should have been the fourth choice. I don't think she ran that badly. She ran the race that she probably expected to run. And it wasn't surprising. It wasn't good enough. It doesn't take away from how good she was earlier this year, but she shouldn't have been favored in there. So I don't see her fourth place. I'm sure it was just one of the connections, but I don't see it as a bad performance. I think she ran a race. The obviously terrific horse was by the second place, Blue Strike, who a number of people liked. And she took a terrible beat in there. She ran terrific. The California horse, and then she really stepped forward and ran big in there. I don't know if she's running going forward. I hope she does. I hope to see more of her. I know that Malathat's retired. I don't know about the others except for Ness. But that was a super race.
Let me ask you a crazy question. Not crazy. Is she a Hall of Famer? She was 10-14. She never was off the board. 6 Grade 1 wins.
I don't think that way, Steve. Wrong person to ask.
Well, it just occurs to me.
Wrong person to ask. I don't care. I don't think I don't care. Right. Hall of Fame is full of people that don't belong in it and horses that don't belong in it, in my opinion. So
it's also
full of the horses and people that do belong in it, but I find the choices to be very questionable.
I tell you what, the resume is. The resume is
okay.
Really
okay, then promoter. We're all okay with somebody else.
Blue Stripe.
I just have no opinion. I
hear
don't
you.
Care.
Blue Stripe, by the way, sold on Sunday at the basic sale. I was the underbidder.
Did she sell broodmare or a racing prospect?
Both. As a racing prospect, my guess is that they. I don't know. I would think that they continue, but
doesn't run that many times, has she?
No, I maybe what. Here.
Who bought her? Do we know who bought her?
Yeah, I'll tell you in a second. I'm forgetting.
Saul.
That was her 11th career start. She's only been off the board herself one time in the last year's distaff. But 11 starts as a 5-year-old mare. Hold on. I tell you, you think I got every single thing is on the tip of my tongue?
Well, if you were prepared, it would be.
Oh, if I was prepared. Yeah, they only sold 500 horses in the last two days.
Don't take the bait.
Don't take the bait. You're funny. Unbelievable. I got it right here. My God. I'll tell you. You know what it's like to have to. Here we go. Blue Stripe was bought. Oh, by Narvik. So it might be going off to. Might be going off to be bred.
Well, that's too bad.
But I will get. I will have that the next time. I'll have the.
And I think Todd deserves a lot of credit.
Yes, he does.
For Malathot, because she looked a little iffy in that SUV, and she just turned it around. She's terrific. Yeah.
Well, by the way, Todd, since we're touching on Nest, Eclipse, and Todd, who didn't get back to me, by the way, today. He's flying home, but Todd didn't. I saw him
call Mike Rapoli. He'll come on.
Maybe. One thing that I have not heard people talk about, Todd is indirectly partially responsible for Flightline. Through Feathered the Dam. And that, of course,
Todd's responsible for every horse out there because he's a trainer of about 60% of the successful sires in this country. So.
Unbelievable. But Feathered, of course, he campaigned for Nest. For Eclipse.
Feathered was a Peachtree horse, I think, right? Was she Peachtree?
She was Eclipse. She was Eclipse.
Eclipse, Feathered?
Absolutely.
Are you sure of this?
I'm positive that Feathered was a part of Eclipse.
Okay.
Absolutely positive. Maybe not her whole career, but I think so, actually. And then Jane Lyon bought Feathered as a broodmare prospect.
Okay. This is just getting more and more interesting as it goes along.
It is. What did you make of the turf result, by the way?
It was a very poor field for Breeders' Cup turf race. I understand Charlie Appley wins with every horse he brings over. He should feel very happy that people regardless. I don't understand. The horse ran in Germany four times, came to the turf, ran the dirt his whole career until he was a 4-year-old. The only horse I could find any perspective on that he beat was the third place finisher, beaten two lengths in his race two back, who came over and ran against Nation's Pride in the Jockey Club Derby. And he's, if you travel out to Aqueduct, you could probably catch him. He's around the eighth ball right now. I remember him because I bet him because he lost to Rebel's Romance. So I don't know. I don't know how you like him. I didn't like Nation's Pride either. I don't understand who's favored. The filly probably didn't get to make her cleanest of runs. And, you know, she was close enough the time before. I'm not sure why they didn't try to get her a little bit closer, but whatever. I thought the second horse ran well, but he had run well in his last couple starts against some very good horses. But how you make the winner is an easy winner in there beyond my handicap and talents, because his races were not particularly good. But it wasn't a particularly good field. I was kind of hoping that the mare would win, more like Goddess. And Bill Mott, by the way, had a tremendous Breeders' Cup.
Yes, he did. Yeah,
really tremendous Breeders' Cup. The only horse that ran badly was the one I liked, Obligatory. I don't know. The Dolphin wins with all these horses. Charlie Appley's winning at over 50% with the horses he sends to America. I don't know.
It's a gaudy scenario. Speaking of which, that gets us to the mile, and Modern Games came marauding.
Charlie Appley's horses never lose. So
yeah, it's amazing. You mentioned Obligatory. That gets us to the sprint, and after the disappointment to start the Saturday card in terms of Breeders' Cup races, here was Judmont, and going to talk tomorrow to Garrett O'Rourke, and Elite Power comes storming, and one of the three Curlin progenies that never before happened.
Yeah, it was a horse that Bill Mott did a great job with him. He really did, moving him forward. I mean, the sprint division in this country has been woeful for a while, and I don't think this was one of the more memorable sprints. It's not staying away from Lee Power. He's a really nice horse. Bill's done a terrific job with him. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Jackie's Warrior, it arguably his Breeders' Cup races, and I thought he actually ran very well as a 2-year-old trying to go long, but the sprints, maybe they sort of exposed his limitations. And the good horse he beat was Life is Good, who was coming off a layoff, and that was a terrific performance. Maybe he's just a horse that isn't able to sustain it through a year. Because he ran well in the four-go and he lost. But he was awful. I mean, you could see when Joel started asking him, it's not like Joel to start riding a horse, the 5/16 pole. He realized he had nothing. And while he's made a run for a brief millisecond, looked like he might win, the reality was he was basically empty. He ran third. I mean, CZ Rocket ran second. Not exactly a horse that came in the race with particularly good credentials in his recent form. I'm not exactly sure why we don't have more good sprinters. You know, I think Jack Christopher would have trounced this field, but he wasn't able to race, unfortunately. So that's just something I can just sort of guess that's the case. But, you know, had Lee Power probably win the Eclipse Award over Jackie's Warrior. And the other day, Jackie's Warrior won what? Won grade one, the Vanderbilt.
Pressing.
Good horse, but a good horse, Jackie's Warrior, a really nice horse. I don't want to knock him, a really good horse, but a horse that lost his biggest races. And at the end of the day, beating Life is Good is really the one great achievement on his resume, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to knock him. He was a neat horse that showed up and ran reasonably well. But in the pantheon of good sprinters, he was never as fast as them, ever. He's no Kona Gold, speaking of horses that can't get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. Andy, the you know what? Since we did that, let's skip from the 6 furlong sprint to the filly and mare sprint, and that it started the day, and you know everything pointed to a bit of a you know of a opportunity for horses from off the pace, and Goodnight Olive Ortiz deserves a lot of credit. Had her positioned beautifully.
Well, she has natural speed, so yeah. I read where she's figured to be at. Yeah. Not even, I mean, RS terrific, but I don't think, I think there's 15 riders could have ridden her in one. She's a good horse, and she's better than those horses, why she was a big favorite. I think the interesting thing about her was that she had a lot of issues, and she lost her debut, but her second and third start, she was very impressive. But I remember when she won her second win was at Aqueduct in November, and Chad didn't be there that day, and I ran into him after the race. And the problem with her was she kept drifting out badly in her races. And I said something to Chad about that, and he said, yeah, she's really good, but she's got some issues, and she's tough to keep on the track. It's frustrating and stuff. And I remember when she came back and she ran her first race this year, I texted Chad, and I said, you know, the interesting thing was she kept a straight line. She didn't bear out. She really looked good, not just fast and winning, but better. And as it turned out, it sort of kept on through this year. Amazing. I mean, that win in the Ballerina, I think it surprised even Chad. And not a surprise this Saturday. She was the best horse in there. I think Echo Zulu ran very well. I think Steve's horse. I know Steve had a tough weekend, but I know Echo Zulu and the horse, the Wicked Halo, ran very well in finishing second and third. Yep. Better horse. And she's a deserving winner of that, I imagine, the champion filly mare sprinter. But Echo Zulu, she's cool. I hope she's running again next year.
That was a terrific performance. Again, on the sprint, probably the most confounding result of the weekend in the turf sprint, where Caravelle essentially, you know, just led gate to wire, and a lot of different things were going on behind her.
She was so improbable, I haven't heard anybody red border.
Yeah, that's great, actually. That's a good line. And also, Andy, the Tuesday, we can't leave off Tuesday, the filly and mare turf getting to pass the
day. I tell you what, and Tuesday was probably my only good opinion the entire day. The fact that they shipped Toy over, Coolmore, that is, to be a rabbit, not only was effective, but it also meant they were serious. They weren't running Tuesday as an afterthought. And I think the betting also, they knew she was going to run. The idea that she was a shorter price than the four horse who had been third in the Prix Opera. She didn't get the right Ryan trip in the Prix Opera. Obviously, Nashua didn't show up and run. She was really good. But I'll say something else. In Italia is sensational.
Yeah. Yep.
In Italian should be the champion of that division. She should, frankly, be the champion over Regal Glory. You know, Regal Glory didn't run well in the mile. But in Italia, I mean, she ran super in defeat. That was a really tough beat for her. She ran really, really well. She's a horse that I never really bought into, but she ran very well in that race.
And then Andy, Friday, quick survey of the 2-year-old action, and we should also
Yeah, I'm going to call him Fort. Andy and I will be the only two people calling him Fort. I know Mike wants to call him Forte. I look forward actually to joking around about this with Mike. I would work on getting him to call him Fort. but he was terrific. I underestimated him. I was dead wrong about him. I did not like him in here. He ran very, very well. Ira gave him a very good ride. Just waited, saved ground, angled out. And K-Rock was very disappointing. I'm not blaming the jockey. I heard some people saying he's chasing a 22-4 quarter. Hello? That's what he was going to do. What did people think he was going to do? Sit five lengths behind? Give me a break. Paybrock ran. He just didn't run as well as he'd run at his prior starts. I imagine he'll run well going forward, but I don't think he got a bad ride. I think he didn't run as well as he's run, and I think Ford ran huge. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the suggestion he lost because some sort of ride is to dismiss how well Ford ran. Maybe he just ran second best. Yeah, he didn't run his best race, but he lost to a horse who ran incredibly well. And Todd's done a great job with him.
Yeah, great. And we should mention, you know, since we're talking two-year-olds on the weekend, Arabian Night on Saturday in that 7/8.
He went like less than 0.4 seconds slower than Goodnight Olive did.
Yeah, 97 buyer for...
So the weekend was the total loss for Bob Baffert.
No.
He got beat with the horse from California the day before. Another horse that Ray knew was going to run, the Brad Cox horse in the second start. Wonder Wheel ran fine, but the Phillies so far, not surprisingly, have a little on the slow side. Ford is not. And the Europeans did pretty well in the turf races. It's been a particularly weak year for our two-year-old turf horses, so it's very unsurprising that the Euros did well in those races. The Phillies was very good. That Meditate?
Yeah, she's
good.
Yeah, she's
good. Really good. Is that the first time that Aiden O'Brien's won the Juvenile Phillies Turf?
As a matter of fact, it is, because I think I wrote about that in my write-up, and I was surprised, actually. Although, there's only been, there had only been a couple of Donativum and oh my gosh, the other one. Donativum and what was the other filly? Oh, for goodness sakes.
Don't worry about it. I won't hold you to it.
Flotilla.
Flotilla.
No, not Donativum. Cressilium. Cressilium.
Okay then.
Yeah.
Okay then.
There it is, Andy. I was hopeful that there was going to be a double carryover to look forward to, but that was quashed in the nightcap on Sunday. I was watching Sunday's action.
I reviewed it later, but I didn't.
Well, it was fun to see you. Did you give out what race did you cover on the player show?
The mile. The dirt mile.
Ah. Oh, we didn't talk about the dirt mile. That's the one race we missed. Cody's Wish and Cyberknife. That was an exciting, until the distaff, that was the day's most exciting race.
Yeah, Cyberknife ran too well to lose. He really ran terrific.
Yeah, he did.
And Cody's Wish was good. You know, he's probably a better one-turn horse. You look at his running style, works well for it. Another horse Bill's done a terrific job with.
He'll be back next year.
Yeah. Am I released?
You are.
Okay. See you later.
Andy Serling, everybody, and there you go. There's Andy's survey of the action. I actually got a fabulous picture. In fact, I'll put that picture up on today's listing of him with Gabby Gaudette, who, of course, the two of them, for so, not for so long, but for a good period, talking horses partners, thanks to Andy. John Green is going to join us, and we're going to talk to John about considering the the occasions that I have run into the greens repeatedly, whether it's at Saratoga, whether it's at the Keeneland sale, whether it's at Breeders' Cup. Everywhere I go, there is Len and John Green, and so there is no way we're not going to celebrate Wonder Wheel's victory in the Juvenile Fillies. John joins us now. John, congratulations to you and Len and Lois and everybody associated.
Well, Steve, I really appreciate it. And it's almost like we're stalking you. I don't want you to think that you need to have a police escort or anything like that. But yeah, we've been meeting up a lot lately.
It's very funny. This really did have a kind of a family feel. And I guess, partly an affinity for her anyway, not that I bet her because I didn't, but certainly an affinity for her, given that Mark was talking about her to our audience from, you know, before she debuted, Mark was singing her praises. And then we've tracked her so closely. And then, frankly, you know, to be there for this victory and between, you know, you and your family and Aaron Yagoda, who basically is a part of the family, and one of my close friends, my man Joe Bianca, your partner for the last several years on the writer's room. I mean, there was just such a good feel to Wonder Wheels winning the Juvenile Fillies. It really made the Breeders' Cup kind of kick off with a big smile.
Well, no, I really appreciate that, Steve. And, you know, it's funny because we won the race, and of course you try to keep your emotions together as you're walking down to the winner's circle. And I walk into the winner's circle, and your smiling face is the very first person I see. So it was a surreal moment because I'm sitting there saying, oh, okay, which Kentucky dignitary am I going to see? Am I going to see the governor? Am I going to see, Will Farris? No, it's you. It's you, like you were, you know, like we could have been in New York at a deli.
That was
the first guy I saw. But it was really fun. You mentioned, you know, to have all our friends there, whether it's you or Yagoda, Joe Bianca, but also to be able to share it with my parents. My parents are in their mid-80s. And they're still active and moving around. But it was really nice to be able to share this one with them and appreciate it. You know, when you do something the first time, I don't think you, at least I don't appreciate it as much as I do when you look back on it or you have a second, you know, bite at the apple. So when we won that exact same race with Jaywalk 4 years earlier, at Churchill Downs, it was a great event. I mean, it was the pinnacle of our racing career and certainly, you know, Jaywalk became champion after winning that race, and it was very, very exciting. This time, I actually personally got to relax and enjoy it. And I was listening to your earlier guests, and they were talking about Flightline, and I had the same feeling. We were like cautiously optimistic, but we were very calm that whole day with Wonder Wheel. And I think part of it was because we knew that she had more in the tank from her previous victory when she won in the Alcibiades. And she had been training there at Keeneland for an entire month. And Mark just kept saying to us, she's getting stronger. She's getting faster. She's feeling better. I haven't really, you know, tightened the screws on her yet until we get to this race. And look, Steve, you know as well as I do that, you know, optimism is the fuel that keeps you going in this business. You know, everyone is, all these babies are undefeated until they're not. They're all training great until they're not. And so you kind of take it with a grain of salt. But with this filly, you know, we felt confident enough where we actually made T-shirts for her. I mean, we actually were giving away Wonder Wheel T-shirts with her dressed as Wonder Woman. And that's how confident we were that she was going to show up. Whether or not she was going to win or not, you know, look, you're running against 14 horses that all deserve to be there. Sometimes you need a little racing luck, which is what we had. But we were like, we were very calmly optimistic about our chances going into the race. And I love the fact that, like, nobody was picking her. I mean, she was 4 or 5 to 1 in the program, and all the pundits, or I should say none of the pundits, picked her to win.
No, and that's actually part of the postscript here in terms of watching the race and looking at the chart and the replay and the miraculous ride by Tyler Gaffalione for his first Breeders' Cup win. And of course, he then brings Caravelle in on Saturday, so he comes away with his first two Breeders' Cup victories as a jockey. But it wasn't that she couldn't win, John, that I think had people being, I don't want to say dismissive, but just sort of doubting her as a win candidate, because I did see her underneath in plenty of selections. The question was, this looked like a field that had a lot of early lick and had a lot of horses that wanted to be forward, even if they didn't want to be pace setters. So the question you asked yourself as a handicapper was, how what's the scenario that where she wins? And nobody's going to answer that question with her passing 11 horses. I mean, that's what was so amazing. And I'll give Mark tremendous credit because, you know, I know people say, well, you know, Mark likes all his horses. Mark made it very clear. It just so happens Hammer and I ran into him Thursday in the back ring. He was going to get licensed. And he said, come sit down for a few minutes. And he said, she does not have to win that way. She does not have to be on the lead. She doesn't even have to be, you know, attending the pace. And so you hear that and you see what you saw and you say, yeah, that's just wishful thinking. But in this particular case, it was a brilliant inside-outside ride. Gaffleone, I mentioned, you know, how he had in the opener there, in the Fillion Mare sprint.
Right.
He put on a ride. He's on Wicked Halo wearing the 11 cloth and leaving from the 10 hole. And if you haven't seen the replay yet, take a look and you're going to see the gray saddle cloth on the rail. I said to him in the paddock before the turf sprint, I said, how did you get to the rail? It was what was reminiscent of was Joel Rosario on, who was it, maybe Good Magic, getting to the rail from the 18 path, from the 19 hole or something. I was like, how did you get there? And he said there was just a seam, and that was our plan. To, you know, that's what they said, get, you know, save as much ground as you could. Well, he got to the paint. It was amazing. Anyway, Gaffleone, miraculous ride.
No question. Tyler did a phenomenal job on the filly. And you know, it's funny, Steve, because you draw it up a certain way. And like you alluded to, there were six different horses that we thought were going to go to the front, including the two on the outside, you know, that the Leave No Trace and Raging Sea. And we were convinced that we were going to be sitting off it. We were going to be kind of in the second group and you know, maybe three or four lengths off it. And the nice thing about Wonder Wheel, and again, we've been very, very fortunate to have some good horses over the years, but I've never had a horse in our 40-plus years of owning racehorses. I've never had a horse that was as versatile as this filly and as level-headed as she is early on in her career. And I think there's a lot to that because it's not just a matter of, like when Jaywalk won, she won every race that we had her for sitting either on or just a length off the lead. I mean, that was her... You know, that was her strength, was her turn of foot early on, and she would just run horses off their feet. And that's the way she won the Breeders' Cup and became champion. This filly, though, you know, Wonder Wheel, if you really, in hindsight, if you look back at her races, you know, she won two of her races sitting off the pace. So she had the ability to do that. Now, did we expect for her to be in 11th place going into the turn, into the top of the stretch? No freaking way. If you had told me that we were in 11th place with 3 furlongs to go, I would say, well, then I'm throwing away the 150 T-shirts that we just bought. There's no reason for us to schlep them down to Kentucky. But Tyler found a way to get her through the rail, not once, but twice. I mean, she hit that hole at two different times. And then had enough momentum to slingshot her around the front runners. Because if you look at the race, to me, the race was won when she went from 11th place to 3rd place going around that turn. I mean, that just doesn't happen that often. You don't see top horses running in grade one races with that kind of acceleration. And then to be able to slingshot her past those horses down the stretch, it really was a fascinating and just an awe-inspiring race for us. And look, whether or not I owned her or not, I would have left Keeneland that day remembering the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly race because it was just that much of a memorable move for such a young horse like that.
Well, she is 4 for 5 on the year and on her career. And, of course, just the placement in the Spinaway, which, you know, in retrospect now, did come off of a significant, a 60-day layoff between the debutante win at Churchill on July 4th and then doesn't come back until September. And it does feel, you know, now that there's been this continuity of the Spinaway, the Alcibiades, and the Breeders' Cup, that she moved forward with third off the layoff. There was a lot to to appeal about that, I suppose. And then, of course, there's the storyline of Fort and her having won the Grade 1 preps on the racetrack. And that's something that we've got to remember again when the event comes back here to Keeneland, because both this turf course and that main track, the horses that like them a lot. And keep that in mind. I mean, we haven't even mentioned you had Sabra Tough at 63-1, and frankly, I needed her third for a back wheel win. But anyway, both Raging Sea and Sabra Tough, they were fourth and fifth in the Alcibiades, and end up third and fourth in here. So the Alcibiades produced the first, third, and fourth place finishers. Only Chop Chop, who really disappointed, is the favorite. I haven't even discussed that yet, but when we get to Brad Cox, I'm sure he'll have some thoughts. But anyway, Wonder Wheel, we should mention, considering how often you and your dad and I have discussed your aggressive purchase posture this season, this has got to be very gratifying. You paid $275 for her as a Keeneland yearling. And, you know, you talked, you both talked about your program and your approach. And as Mark Cassie said yesterday, this kind of bodes well going forward for, you know, what the plan DJ Stable has in mind.
And you know, Steve, I appreciate you bringing that up. Every sale, almost, you know, we go into it with a different kind of approach, because it used to be where you could say, okay, well, for the year, we're going to, you know, spend X dollars, we're going to buy Y horses, and we're going to try to get them from, you know, from certain families or sons and daughters of top, you know, producing stallions. And what's happened is that the marketplace is so fluid that it literally changes, you know, sale to sale now. And you can even make an argument on some of these longer sales, whether it's a 4-day OBS April sale or, you know, or a 10-day September sale at Keeneland, you know, it changes like day to day sometimes. You know, people leave, people spend all their money. Some partnerships, you know, literally get all their inventory and get out of Dodge. So you have to come in and be very nimble and pivot a lot. And this filly in particular, Wonder Wheel, is a perfect example, because we went into that sale expecting to try to buy a few horses, you know, from proven families. And she was on our list, but I was convinced, and I try to handicap, like, you know, you just said Andy talking about handicapping races. I try to handicap what some of these horses are going to sell for. And I was convinced that Wonder Wheel was going to bring $500,000 if she brought a dollar, because she was so well-bred, you know, daughter of Into Mischief, Wonder Gal, who was a multiple graded stake winner. She had, you know, she looked the part. Was she perfect physically? No. But, you know, Into Mischiefs are still, you know, Into Mischiefs. I was convinced we were going to have to give $500,000. We vetted her out. We really didn't expect to be able to buy her. So much so that I had Kim Valerio, who shortlists for us, I had her stand near the breeder of the horse, you know, from Clear Sky, just in case it didn't bring its reserve. And sure enough, Wonder Wheel didn't bring her reserve. Her reserve was $299,000, and she, you know, she stalled right at that upper 200 range. So as soon as the horse went to the ring, I called Kim and said, "Can you find out if that horse was sold or not?" And she said, "Yeah, I'm standing right here." And she literally asked. They said no. We said, "What is it going to take?" They said 300. We countered with 275, and like within 10 seconds after the horse left the ring, we bought her as an RNA. And it's a good thing we did. It's a good thing Kim was stationed there, because my understanding was, as they were walking to the Keeneland office, the Demerick family actually came up to the consignor and said, "Hey, did that filly sell? Because we wanted to buy her." And they said, "No, we just made a deal with DJ, and we're walking to the office right now." So you have to be that quick and that nimble, and you have that ability to make decisions like that. Otherwise, you miss out on opportunities.
Well, and that, you know, there's those kinds of stories. You know, yesterday, those that heard David and Gordo talk about, you know, going to Summerwind, and you know, they're there to see the Pharaoh sibling, and David's eye trains over to to this weanling. Who's that?
Yep, exactly. And you know, it's funny because we had a similar situation a couple of years ago when COVID was going on, and Bo Hunt, who Pinhook sources with us over the past few years, called me and said, "Hey, John, I have these two really nice colts. I don't know. One's a New York bred. One's an Ironicus. Why don't you send Mark over and have him look at it and tell me what you think?" So Mark went over and he was like, "Wow, this New York bred is really good looking and blah, blah, blah." And yeah, the Ironicus isn't bad. So we bought him in a package, and sure enough, you know, the New York bred turns out to be a horse of ours named Cotton, who has been a useful New York bred for us. And the kind of the throw-in horse was a horse named Helium, you know, who we won the Tampa Bay Derby with and ran in the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, you have to like make your luck. And I think, you know, in Gordo's comment yesterday about, you know, it was kind of kismet. I was on the plane and all of a sudden that horse showed up again. I think you just have to be open to the idea that sometimes we're smart and sometimes, you know, luck runs us over. We ran Webslinger in the Breeders' Cup turf, in the juvenile turf, that, you know, the same day as Wonder Wheel. And, you know, that horse was RNA'd three different times for under 50,000. And you would think that, like, so many people who are so smart and so astute would have bought this Constitution colt, you know, for 50 or 45 or 40 as a weanling, yearling, or the first time he sold as a 2-year-old. And all of us missed it on all. We just ignored the horse. And then we ended up buying the horse in June of his 2-year-old year at the OBS sale for 50 grand. And he won a $500,000 race. So, like, that's why you have to always keep your eyes open. I know I'm sounding like a broken record, but you really have to, like, constantly just work the book and work the barns and just be open to ideas, because, you know, sometimes these opportunities will just avail themselves to you.
Well, this a parallel conversation to wrap up the morning, because we talked to Costa Aronis as well, and he has won two Breeders' Cup Classics in the last 5 years, and you guys have won two juvenile fillies in about the same time.
Yep. No question. And you know, we watch some of these great programs, like them and like Eclipse and Bloom, and you know, you can pick up opportunities and pick up strategies from a lot of these you know, programs, because at heart they're business people. And they, sure, you know, whether they do it for their winery or for their, you know, their publishing company or for their car dealership, that they're implementing business strategies into this business. And you can take an advantage. Now, granted, some of it's, you have to be lucky also. Some of it's a little bit luck. And if I can just take 1 minute, Steve, just to mention something. Last year, we got a little bit of luck because we allowed some of our listeners on the podcast to name a horse of ours. And we got like 100 and something, you know, different people who sent in, you know, multiple names. And we picked the name Standard Goodside, and that horse won first time out and is running stake races for us and has been a nice contender. If it's okay with you, you know, Mom, Dad, and I would like to also offer that opportunity for one of your listeners as well, to name a horse and hopefully bring us some luck.
Of course, we'd love this. Which one? What do you got?
Okay, so we bought a horse in the October sale, a Vino Rosso, out of Windspun, hip 387. It's a Vino Rosso colt, hip 387, and we would like to have some ideas on how to name the horse. So, you know, of course, the rules, you know, of the jockey club, it's got to be in accordance with the rules of the jockey club. So you can't name anything like Big Sucks, because that's, you know, that wouldn't work. And also, I think it's been taken before, but that's beside the point. But you know, it's got to be in accordance with the rules of the jockey club. But what I'd love to have people do is, you know, send me on Twitter at John Green 2022, some names of what they would like to see us name this Vino Rosso Windspun yearling. Or Steve, if they want to, you know, send you a private message on your Twitter,
sure,
handle as well, and you could forward it on to me. But what I'd like to do, what Mom and Dad and I would like to do, is maybe, you know, get some of these names over the next couple of weeks, and then maybe come back on in a couple of weeks and make a big announcement as to who it's going to be, you know, what the name's going to be. But We're really excited. It brought us a lot of luck last time, and I think your listening audience is very deserving of having the opportunity to name a horse, because we have a lot of fun naming them. It gives you a sense of pride when you have a really fun name, like Mom named Wonder Wheel, after the first amusement park ride that she rode on when she was a kid. And, brought us some luck. And Web Slinger is a son of Arana. Arana means spider in Spanish. So, we have fun with this stuff. So we wanted to let the listening audience have that opportunity with you as well. Send you a private message with a name, or send me the private message at Twitter at John Green, JONGREEN 2022. And, we'll make an announcement in a couple of weeks as to what the horse's name is going to be.
Outstanding. I'll put up the sale page. We'll get it out of off the website. And Vino Rosso out of Windspun. And how much fun is that? And since you did mention it, I will note that tomorrow night at 10 National, Joe Besseker and Tim Kreiser, they've got the debut of Vic, BYK, in the fifth race. And so I'm kind of excited about that. John, thanks so much. Congratulations to you and Dad and Lois and everybody associated. Well done. Thank you.
Always my pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much.
John Green, everybody, DJ Stable, and more backstory on Wonder Wheel. Going to send you out into the race day. It's Tuesday. Thanks to Jeff Bloom and Costa Aronis, John Green, Andy Serling, and Nick Luck for that great detailed hour. Back for a third day and final day from Keeneland tomorrow, 9 o'clock. If you missed anything, replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. And we'll have the archive and pod up in a little bit. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? NairaBets. We spend